Hello and welcome to Inner Tribal Radio. This is Inner Tribal Radio's Red Road Empower Hour. This is Leah Wetzel, your hostess tonight, Punaki. And we have a very special segment for you tonight. We got some very amazing guest speakers, and we're going to do kind of a round table talk. And so I'm going to start out by letting everybody introduce themselves. Miss Jackie, would you like to go first?
Sure. Hi, my name is Jackie Sharp. I've been addicted to opiates for 20 years. I injected them. I needed them every day. I felt like I needed them every day to get through life. I mean, just to not be sick from the opiates. I used them every day. I lost out on a lot of time in 20 years. I mean, I lost out on a lot of everything. Most importantly, my children. Just going to their functions, just being there for them as a mother. Many, many things have happened in that 20 years that I used opiates. And then, you know, everybody knows that recently, the heroin and the fentanyl has become such an epidemic. I have tried heroin a few times just because I couldn't find the opiates. And then the fentanyl, the pills that are stamped like a Perk 30 that are pure fentanyl. Well, again, I couldn't find morphine, which was my drug of choice. I mean, I always chose the morphine over any of the opiates. And so I end up getting a couple from a girl, and I come home and I end up doing one whole one because I thought to myself, heck, I've done 100 milligram patches of fentanyl. You know, I can handle this. Did what I did with it. Drew it up in my needle. I done it. I didn't even know I went out. My boy heard me moaning, and I OD'd. I OD'd on a fentanyl pill, and it was right during the in the works of in my mind that I wanted to get clean. My oldest son and my middle son were constantly on me, you know, how I needed to stop using. But because my children love me so much, after I'd done went through my paycheck, they didn't want to see me sick. So they, mom, do you need to make a loan? Mom, do you need money out? They done that for me. But then it became to where, you know, we're tired of enabling you, you know. We're just done. You know, if you get sick, you get greedy, do all what you bought with your paycheck. I mean, I'm not going to help you because you need to stop doing what you're doing. We love you. We need you, mom. You know, we need you in our life. And I could see that. And now I have 7 grandchildren that really have been an impact on my sobriety, not only my 5 children that I have 7 grandchildren. I'm like, man, I had such a wonderful grandmother who raised me. And I'm like feeling so selfish that I was neglecting my kids and my grandchildren and taking that away from them instead of blessing them with that. So, that was ODing and wanting to give that blessing back to my grandchildren and my children, and not only honor my grandmother and my mother who raised me in a good home. They did not show me that way of life. So I also felt kind of embarrassed that I chose that road, knowing that my grandma never taught me them kind of ways. And so, yeah, that was what I done. And so, my son looks at me one day, my oldest son, straight in the eye, and he said, "Mom, you know, you don't know what you would do to me. If anything ever happened to me, you don't know what it would do to me. And you don't know what it would do to my little girls. They love you so much." So him telling me that, the ODing and wanting to honor my grandmother and just stop disrespecting myself and my body had brought me to where I'm at now. Living sobriety that I'm enjoying it so much more than I have ever have in my times of sobriety. I've gotten clean several times, but never did I use my tools such as my spirituality, my groups, any kind of support groups. I did not reach out and use those. I felt like just my want to be sober would get me through it, but we can't walk this alone. And so yeah, my sobriety this time is like amazing. I've been so blessed. The Lord has shown me so many tools. I'm learning just baby steps. I mean, I'm being blessed all the time and learning my blessings and how to just keep on keeping on.
Thank you, Jackie. And Jackie and I have known each other for quite some time and within use, and it's just amazing to have her here on the Red Road with me. So thank you for sharing that, Jackie.
You're welcome.
Frank, would you like to go next?
Yeah. Hey, Uncle Mario. My name is Frank Richards. I'm Hoopa enrolled, but I'm Hoopa Yurok in Redwood Creek. And this is probably my fifth time getting clean and sober. I had a problem with meth and alcohol. And this is amazing. I haven't had a circle like this in a long time. We tried to get one going here in Hoopa. But it's amazing, the NA's people kind of fight with the AA people. I've seen arguments break out, and it's like, what are we doing? You know, this is for wellness, it's for healthiness. But like I said before, the heroin and the fentanyl is heavy here, and it's from lack of opportunities and resources. And we're about ready to take off here. I guess that money that relief money that's supposed to get cut loose, that other tribes have, Hoopa supposed to be getting it cut loose. And hopefully we're going to create some training opportunities and some affordable housing opportunities and economic development. And this, I've been doing this for about 6 years, last 2 years heavy. And I really appreciate the kudos and the thumbs up that I've been getting. Before, I thought it was patronizing, like they like, yeah, go for it, you know, let's keep us informed. And like, I need your guys' help, you know, I don't need thumbs up and pats on the back. And so I learned to hold my anger. I guess I was an angry guy, and I just didn't accept no for an answer. Every meeting I went to, and they told me, come back with more information, or we need to check on something first. And I said, well, as this meeting's over, I'll be back. Let me know what you need information on, and I'll be back. And that was like 5-6 meetings ago. And this council that we have is a great council. We just got a new council about 6 months ago. Young chairman and a lot of educated people. And I think we're going to be doing good things here in Hoopa. And it's time. It really is time. My Jackie was talking about grandkids. My G babies were here, and they're 7 and 3. And are we answering all the questions, or are we just introducing ourselves? Because the biggest blessing in recovery for me, the biggest blessing for me is I have 3 adult children and 1 a junior in high school. And my oldest, my daughter, who has the grandbabies, I almost lost her. And not like, you know, death or nothing, but she was moving away from me, her father. And she got a man who got her pregnant, who was just like I was probably about 15, 20 years ago. And it was a very rough relationship with her and him, and me and him got into it. And there was gunfire and weapons and cops and all that, and domestic violence. And I was protecting her, and she was protecting him. And so, and we lived like 100 feet apart. You know, she just moved into this apartment complex next to my home, and they were having all these fights, and, you know, and I just went up there and just handled it. And she was really hating me for that, for getting in her business and not understanding how much she loved him. And she would come to the house once in a while, and she looked like she just got done fighting. And I just, one time I just said, hey, you know what? I can't have this no more. You can't come here and be crying and complaining about that dude and go right back to him. You know, if you can't come here and be with us and talk with us and associate with your family, don't come around. And she didn't come around for a while, but then she came around, and it was happy. It was, you know, the holidays she would come around. And then she went away about 3 hours away to a Christian rehab in Redding, California, and just flourished. She really flourished. And that was one thing that the comment was made a while ago on this previous recording was Christian and spirituality and traditional. I'm a guy who thinks both. It's a higher power. The creators call different names from different races of people, but it's all headed to the right place of goodness and kindness and healthiness and respect and honor and truth, all that. And it's creator. And you can call them God or whatever anybody else calls them. It's a higher power. And I found it in AA in Washington, my 3rd time I got clean and sober. And I glorify him every day. Everything I do is glorify the creator. That I have a light shining on me. I was in the darkness for 35 years with the drugs and the alcohol and the bad behavior. My mom, she's elderly, and I'm just totally grateful that she can see me clean and sober now and having a future and working towards good things for the community and being part of the community. I wasn't raised traditional, but my mom's family is a dance family. We just had a renewal dance. I chose not to go because our old medicine man passed away, and he passed it down to his son, and a lot of turmoil, controversy going on with that. So I stepped back and let this dance happen. And then another 2 years, we're gonna have it again. But there were some things that was done wrong, and so I'm not gonna pass judgment on that at all. I'm just glad I wasn't there for myself and my children. My daughter had a flower dance. My youngest daughter had a flower dance, a coming of age flower dance, probably 6 years ago. And that just totally healed me and my family. And I relapsed, but that whole time since her flower dance was just amazing to watch her become a young woman, graduate from college, and be the person that she is. I call her my gauge. I can ask her, her name's Nation. And I said, Nation, how are we doing? And she could either tell me, we could be doing better, or we're doing good, or we need to start working. And so when she say we need to start working is when she's telling me, you got to get kicking me in the pants, you know, and she's my gauge. So I'm very lucky to have all my children with me. They're all well, they're all doing awesome things. one thing that really knocked me off my feet was my youngest son. He's a junior in high school. Just let me know he wants to be a cheerleader. And I didn't know how to handle that. I really didn't. And it went well. We had a really good talk about it. And I let him know my side of it. And I said, if you want to do that and that makes you happy, man, just do it, you know? And he came out of his shell. He was really quiet and, you know, stay by himself. But that cheering thing is just, he's really gabby now and he's a feelie. And I could see where my old self would have shut that down. And, you know, it would have been living with a dynamite ready to go off, because there's a lot of stuff going on with that too, that kind of behavior and stuff. And small community, I let him know what's going to happen and how I feel about it. But I really appreciate that he is happy. You know, it seemed like the kids nowadays, their emotions, it doesn't match their face. And so, and I can see that. Clean and sober, I can see that. I can feel that. I can be here. I can fall asleep. I'm a lazy boy. And if they, you know, come in, I wake up, or if they need to talk to me, they tap me on the foot and I'm there. And I'm there. And I know that. Today, you know, and we're all going through this. I haven't been the parent of three adult children, one junior before, and that's going to change next year. And so the family is really, we're really tight now. And I owe it all to the Creator, you know, and, my ex-girlfriend, she's still on her journey of drugs and alcohol, but I told her my story and she's like, you're a miracle. She goes, you're a miracle. You did that for that long and you changed. And it was just amazing. It's an amazing time to be clean and sober. I have said in meetings that I appreciate my addiction. And what I meant is I wouldn't be able to feel this way right now, happy, healthy, and have future goals without looking back into all the bad times. And they're good times too. It wasn't all bad, you know, the partying and stuff, but the bad was really bad. And so I'm really glad that I can actually take a nap because I'm exhausted and I can lay down and go to sleep and wake up usually refreshed. But I remember when that happened about 2 years ago, when I just felt tired and just laid on the couch and just immediately fell asleep and woke up so refreshed. And I realized this is my first nap that I've actually taken, you know, without falling down or passing out, or, and it felt really good. So yeah, we got good things going. Our people are rising left and right all over the place. It's awesome to see. And how I came to your program is on Facebook. I'm a new guy on Facebook, but I'm digging it. And yeah, I got to get up and check my Facebook first thing in the morning. But yeah, I appreciate what you're doing, and I'm happy to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Frank. And I'm happy and honored you're with us. And it's always good to see you. On the Red Road of Healing. Just for our listeners on Facebook, if you're looking for some extra support, it doesn't matter your background, doesn't matter where you come from, but we're on the Red Road of Healing. It's called a Facebook group. And so next we have Kat. We introduce yourself, please.
Hello, I'm Kat. And I wouldn't be here if I hadn't found recovery. That was how I found the circle. And I wouldn't have a life if it wasn't for recovery. Ultimately, I became a really bad intravenous heroin addict for I don't even know how many years. It is a while. In the last several years of it, I remember feeling really scared and really hopeless. And I had already lost an older sister before I ever started using to the same drug. She died of an overdose when I was 17. And at that time, I didn't think I would ever use drugs. Part of the reason why I used was I was trying to numb that pain. And I also, she was somebody that I was really, that meant a lot to me, that I loved a lot. And when she died, I felt like part of me died. And I kind of had a death wish. I just didn't appreciate life the way that I'm learning to now. I hadn't ever really lived before, because, I mean, addiction led me here, but, or it led me to recovery, but I had problems long before addiction. Addiction using, it was how I was trying to solve the problem. I'm an Oklahoma Cherokee and also Filipino heritage, but I was not raised traditional. I was raised with more knowledge of my Cherokee culture than of the Filipino side. I'm still learning about it, but ultimately what I've learned that has really brought me just understanding of my family and my background and also my path to healing is that both sides of my family are Indigenous people who were colonized. Both sides of my family, we don't know, I mean, neither my parents knew their languages. I was passed some of the traditions, some of the Cherokee traditions were passed to me. And I felt like as I was growing up, that was always the culture that I identified with. And I felt drawn to it, but I lost track of all of that when I was in addiction. And then I'm just under 21 months sober. During lockdown, I knew I needed some kind of support. I knew I needed to find some kind of path of recovery because I really wanted to stay sober. I really wanted it to work out. I didn't think I was going to survive my addiction. I had already lost a sister to the same thing. And as far as I could see, I was way worse than she ever was. I had tracks all up and down on my arms and sores, and I wore gloves all the time and long sleeves, and I was extremely isolated and sick, and I didn't want to go back there. I was so afraid. And on top of that, I have two kids who are my whole life, my heart and my reason for living. And I had already felt that I'd let them down in so many ways when I got deeper into my addiction. And I'm still in recovery. I'm learning to love myself, and I'm learning to love myself through learning about my culture. It's giving me a sense of wholeness it's just like there was always something missing. And I just cared way too much about, I live in a rural area of Northern California, and it's not super diverse here, especially not in the 80s when I moved here. And I was bullied a lot growing up. In my school, I was the only kid who wasn't white. And I used to look at it as something, as much as I feel very differently now. But back then, it was something that I hated about myself. I thought it was a weakness. And I just wanted to fit in. I just had no idea until in recovery, I found a Native AA meeting out of another state. And it was the first time that I'd been in a meeting and felt like, wow, I think that I actually feel at home here. I think there might be a place for me in a program of recovery. I just hadn't ever thought that I could be one of those people that could feel at home in a meeting, or that could open up and share or connect with other people. At the root of my addiction was trauma. That's why I use. Before I was a drug addict, I was a cutter. I was very suicidal. I struggled with those things from the time I was about 15. And suicidal ideation much earlier than that. I didn't have coping skills. And also just suicide, it runs in my family. I have two generations of grandfathers who successfully completed suicide. And it's just learning about that intergenerational trauma on both sides of my family that Indigenous people have gone through, and why we don't know our languages, why it used to be illegal. I mean, there's reasons why I don't know what I don't know, and why my family didn't know. And it wasn't because they didn't want to share those things with me, or they didn't want me to know who I was, or they wanted to, but they didn't want to hurt me, you know. It, through recovery, just when I went to that meeting, it just felt right. It wasn't my tribe, but it was actually, it was multiple tribes, but it just felt right. And I kept going to that, and it just kind of, I was at this point in my sobriety where I had been sober for several months, but I don't know if I could really say I had found recovery yet, because I feel like I found recovery through community and then also through culture and just connecting with others. Because so much of, just for me, trauma, it's given me an intense fear of connecting with other people, trusting other people, just trusting I couldn't trust myself. I didn't have any trust in life, and I didn't have a connection or the trust that I have now in the Creator. Now, all of those things are, those were missing pieces in my life. And they make me feel like I'm becoming who I was meant to be. And they make me feel whole. And I didn't even know I could feel this way. I didn't know I could feel so grounded, or that I would, I mean, even just day to day, the things that I notice and appreciate now, I feel kind of like I've come full circle in a lot of ways to how I felt when I was a little kid. Like, I remember appreciating things like trees and flowers and birds, even a dandelion or a moth or something, you know, as a little kid, and feeling like knowing that those things were sacred and just feeling connected with nature and with other people and with animals. And in addiction, I lost all of that. And I just felt alone and I felt hopeless, and it was so dark. I feel like in a lot of ways, like finding my culture has allowed that inner child to heal. And just, I just feel like I'm becoming who I was meant to be after being so lost for so long, and just not even, just wandering around in the dark, trying to numb myself, trying to feel better in the moment, but just getting further and further off the path that I was meant to be on in my life, that Creator intended for me. And now I'm just starting to feel more in balance, and I'm seeing a future, and I'm having hope. And I can feel again, I can connect with other people. I just felt like I was afraid that that part of me was so damaged that I would never be able to feel close to another person or trust another person or open up to another person or just feel human again. I had lost my ability to cry. I hadn't cried since I was 6 years old. That was something that we didn't do in my family. It was seen as weakness. And as I heal, one of the most special things has been just seeing the healing in my children. I see it trickle down to them, and I also see it in my parents. I mean, it's very powerful the way that we all connect over culture now. And it's a huge blessing. I'm grateful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Kat. Some beautiful words, some powerful words from everybody. And so I'll introduce myself. I'm Leah Wetzel, and I've been an active addict since I was 13 years old. The first 11 years of my life, I was dealing with, sexual abuse. I was being molested by a first cousin who was quite a bit older than me. He was in and out of prison, I remember. And my first memories, I was 2 years old. And so, and he told me if I told anybody, he was going to hurt my parents. And so my first lesson of loyalty was a pretty sick one. All of that comes from that intergenerational trauma piece, because all of our parents were, in boarding schools, and we're a product of the boarding schools. And, you know, I knew about the boarding schools growing up, but my mom's generation is that generation of don't ask and don't tell, you know, and kids are to be seen and not heard. And, you know, my parents did the best they could with me, you know, with what resources they had. And, you know, someone had said earlier, you know, a lot, they lacked a lot of resources then. And, you know, but so I was about 7 years old when, so we lived in a white, urban area, and my stepdad was black. My mom had left my dad when I was three, and she remarried, and he was a wonderful man. And, my mom, she's very dark, black feet woman. And so I was 7 years old, and, the school said for everybody to dress up like their ancestors. And, it was like the bicentennial of Montana or something. And so I was all excited, and my mom dressed me up in, my great, great grandma Mabel's fully buckskin beaded dress that she made my mom. And I went to school and had my little bell. We were supposed to ring the bell, and we all went into the gymnasium, and literally every single person, including the teachers, were all cowboys and cowgirls. And here I was, the only Native. And from that day on, you know, they recognized that I was different. And that's where I learned how to fight in that white little urban area. You know, I was getting jumped after school. I was getting tormented in school. My parents would go to the school and try to talk to them. And, you know, that colonialism was deep and thick in Great Falls, Montana in the 80s. And it you know, it still is. We still fight against that. And, but yeah, I was about 13 when I started smoking weed and drinking, and it progressed into, you know, I used crank when I was 15, I was selling it. And I tried coke, and by my 20s, I was deep in the pain pills. And by 21, I was down in Tucson, Arizona. And the easiest thing to get down there was heroin. And my brother I only had one sibling, and he got sent to prison. And him and I were really close. Like, he was my best friend. And I remember just being really depressed and just not really caring anymore. And I ended up injecting the heroin, and I loved it. Like, I loved it more than I loved myself. I loved it more than anything in the world. And at that time, I had my own construction company. I had started when I was 19, and I was the first ever in BIA history to be bonded. They bonded me $80,000 to do a gravel crushing pit out in Crow Agency. And we did it well. And I had all this money, and my dad had moved down to Arizona, because in Montana during the wintertime, you can't really do much construction. And so he was down there kind of eyeballing, you know, jobs and looking at, you know, putting in bids down there. 'Cause in Tucson, I think there are six, maybe seven tribes touching within just that city limits. And so a lot of work down there. But yeah, I just really got lost in the needle. And I was about 22 when I met my ex, had my daughter. She was born on 777. And I remember the first time I looked in her eyes, like, I just wanted to be able to give her everything that I didn't get. You know, I just wanted, I was like, I have somebody that loves me, you know, and I just didn't love myself, and I didn't know how to love myself. And so I had my son, almost like 15 months later. beautiful, beautiful little boy. And my ex had gone to prison and he was on his way out. And I told him, you know, I need to go to treatment. And so I went to my first treatment center, got out, didn't use those tools, and, you know, did that about 5-6 times in and out of different treatment centers. I ended up picking up a felony, getting sent to prison. And while I was there, my only brother, my only sibling passed away from drug. Well, not overdose, but he screwed his body up pretty bad from drugs. And, you know, that ended up taking his life because it messed his health was so bad. And he passed away. He had a grand mal seizure. And I remember finding out about it when I was in there. And I got out, finished out my time, and it just really messed me up, not being able to see the person that I was used to being able to see, you know, in the places and during holidays. And so I just went right back at it. And I almost lost my life this last time. Drug deal gone bad. I was at the wrong place at the wrong time getting high, and some people pulled some shady shit, and I just happened to be there. And somebody, hold on a second. Somebody, paid somebody to go handle it. And I was the one that was marked as to be handled. And I almost got beat to death. I was in a motel room for 3 days, not knowing if I was going to make it out of there or not. And this wasn't the first time that something like this had happened. I had been human trafficked on my own reservation when I was younger. I'd been in multiple bad relationships. And so I just like put the acting career of my life on. And I had no idea like the whole scenario. I thought I did something wrong and this guy just like snapped. And so I just, you know, kept telling him, I'm sorry I made him do this. And, you know, I ended up getting out of there and something changed in me. I ended up getting picked up for some more mischief and I got put in drug treatment court. And a little while after that, they put me in the women's trauma treatment center. And I ended up progressing very well in drug court. I found out I had a traumatic brain injury and they really supported me through all of that. And I ended up taking peer support training here at the Montana's Peer Network. And I am now a certified behavioral health peer support specialist for Montana's Peer Network, as well as for the same court that pretty much saved my life. I do supportive services for them. And I'm also the vice president of the Montana Missing Murdered Indigenous Task Force. But we'll go into our next question. And I just, again, want to thank each and every one of you for being here. I really appreciate your time and your words, right? Because our words are very powerful. And all of our listeners, you know, take something that's said tonight and you know, use it in your life. Because something that somebody's saying tonight is something that somebody needed to hear. And so my next question for Jackie, we'll start out with Jackie, will be, what's been the biggest blessing for you in recovery?
Oh, gosh. Being blessed with my sobriety is so many blessings. Number one thing is that I'm able to be the grandmother and mother that my children need and wanted. Just right there, I just don't even know the words for it, how the great feeling that it is that I'm able to be the mother and grandmother that my grandmother was to me. She was such a, a wonderful woman. She raised me in a clean and sober home that was, I was showered with love. I was like everybody's little girl, you know. And me during my addiction, taking them kinds of things away from my kids, you know, I always try to keep my kids close knit, and they are. I am really thankful that even through my addiction, I kept my kids together. I raised them. I didn't shuffle them off, you know, here or there, whatever. I don't, like, you know, we all walk our own road. But yeah, I just really am thankful for that, that I'm able to give that back to my kids. I'm able to wake up and not have to worry where I'm going to get that pill or how I'm going to get it, because I've stooped to some real low levels to get and provide for my addiction. I'm not proud of what I've done, but I'm very, very thankful for my addiction, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't be the strong warrior that I am, because I've been through a lot of terrible things in my addiction. I was like, I served that addiction so loyally. Like that was my number one thing to take care of, but now I don't have to worry about that. I can love myself, respect myself. I'm able to obtain so much respect and from my community, my ex-using friends. I mean, they all just admire me and tell me, you know, that they're so proud of me, that you know, just to keep pushing forward. They're glad that I was able to rise above that. I mean, putting a needle in my arm for 20 years every day took a lot from me. And so now I'm just able to live life and love it. I mean, I just can't believe the freedom that I took away from myself for that long and served something that was so dark, evil. My self-esteem just like went from a 0 to 1,000. I never knew I could love myself so much. I never knew I could show my kids and my grandkids so much love, and it has taught me that, man, I just want to share this love and this great feeling with everybody that is sick in addiction, you know, because it's doable. It's so doable. You just got to want to be sober and reach out, and everybody is willing to help that addict if they could just reach out. You got to make that first step, you know. And I'm really grateful and thankful that I done that. Like I said, I'm grateful for my addiction, because if I hadn't OD'd on that fentanyl, and my kids telling me that, you know, they don't know what it would do to them to lose me, because I'm all my kids have. My family have all passed on. And I had my first child at 16. I have 5 kids. I had them all by time I was 23. And so I was pretty much like a baby raising babies. I grew up with my kids. Now my kids are, they are my best friends. That they're my go-tos besides my new friends that I have met in sobriety. Yeah, it's just a, it's such a blessing to be sober and be able to. One thing, one of my tools in appreciating in sobriety is we are, the Blackfeet are some of the most blessed people, or one of the blessed tribes there is. We have the Rocky Mountain front right out my window, and I can go out if I'm kind of feeling down. I go out and get the fresh air that like Californians don't have. A lot of people don't have this great mountain air, and you look up at the mountains and you get this greatest feeling of inspiration, knowing what God has blessed us people with. And there's so many of us that have taken that for granted and not respected what we have been blessed with. I mean, truly, truly blessed people we are. And so, yeah, I'm really, really a blessed, sober person right now. And I'm feeling so loved that that I don't want to ever lose this love. It's not worth turning back to such a dark life. That's my thankfulness for being sober right now.
Thank you, Jackie. That's beautiful. And just the way you explained it, it's like we could just visualize it. A lot of beauty within your words. Frank, would you like to go next?
Is the what I've learned in recovery? Is that the next question?
Your biggest blessing in recovery. And then maybe this is a good time for you to share what you did about Creator.
One thing that you asked me to share was the thing I said about culture. In my class that I have for these young carpenters, we looked up culture, heritage, legacy, tradition, ceremony, and what they meant. And the word culture is what a person does daily or routinely. And I think we as Native people are very, very blessed and lucky to have our culture always been there, waiting for us to show interest. And I wasn't raised this way. I was raised all the way through elementary school without even really knowing what tribe I was from. And where I was raised in Oregon, me and my sister and another Indian fella was the only ones that weren't white. Everybody was white. And I don't really remember any racism because we were all really good in sports and everybody wanted us on their team. And when they found out that we weren't Mexicans and that we actually were Native Americans, some of their kids' parents wanted their kids to be friends with us. So it was kind of, it was, a, you know, kind of like a fame thing. But you know, culture is what we do routinely and daily. And prayer is, I pray all the time. I've been noticing I pray for my adult kids more as they leave the house, as they, you know, drive down the road, or if they're going to go hang out with their friends. And I'd always tell them behave. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy being clean and sober, is I know where my kids are, and I know what they're doing, and I know basically where they're at. And so that's what I really enjoy about being in recovery. I can, like I said, I can fall asleep watching my Western show and nobody's giving me any hassle or you know, causing noise or waking me up. Or and that's kind of like a double-edged sword, because I isolated myself. I was by my, at the end of my using, I was by myself. I would get in my car and fill the trunk with alcohol and go get my dope and my marijuana and my bottle and just cruise around. And the whole time I'm feeling, getting drunk, getting too stoned, getting too wired, and I'd pull over and have to either smoke a piece of my joint or do some drugs or drink a bottle. And it was crazy because I look back at it now, because what I was doing was staying sober. And I didn't want to get too drunk. I didn't want to get too high. I didn't want to get too messed out of it. And I spent all this money, seriously amount of money, and wrecked a few cars. I am a grandpa now, and I really like that, being called Papa. I didn't think I would like that, but I really like that. I don't know if I like Grandpa, but Papa's better. But those guys just light me up. They light me up because it's a love that is just pure and clean, and you know, there's no hidden agendas or what do you mean by that type of thing. They're just children, and they're pure gift from the Creator, and they just really love me, and I love them. And that's amazing to actually feel love, to give love, to receive love, and to be in love. That's one thing about the cutting loose the ex-girlfriend who was using. It's weird for me. I'm 55 and single, and it's strange for me because I was with the kids' mom for 23 years. Then I was with my ex for 2 or 3 years, and I've been single for about a year and a half. But the relationship thing, the whole flirting and showing interest and that whole thing, that was never on my radar, never. And now I don't know what it is. I don't even know if I'm being flirted with. And it's frustrating. It really is frustrating. And so I dive into my work. I dive into my nonprofit, and I'm going to grow that to be really big and get better, be healthier, and work on my youngest son that I got to take care of until he graduates. And I don't know what's going to happen then. I mean, he's already talking about moving out, and it's just me and him. And it's like, wow, you're going to leave me, huh? But planning, having goals, working the goals. And one thing I really love about my recovery and being clean and sober is I'm able to be humble. I'm able to handle crap without getting super mad. I still get a little mad. I got to work on that. But for the most part, I'm handling my emotions better. And I don't think I could have done that without being clean and sober and living the life that I am living now. Just being grateful to be alive, I mean, and not burnt out, not friendless, not houseless, in their crap, walking downtown, hanging out under the bridge and doing all kinds of stuff. And I don't even see how they can stay high all the time or drunk all the time. But yeah, I really, those are beacons there that tells me that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And working with the youth, working with the community, like these kids, these young people that I got working for me, my students, we went and built the porch, we fixed the floor, and seeing the homeowner appreciate that young man who never felt like he had been appreciated before, to see him get all blushed and embarrassed, it was such an awesome, that's what I would do it for, you know. And he was just riding high the whole time we left. And I said, yeah, she's appreciating you, you know. And he goes, that feels awesome. And he's a kid with ADD. He didn't finish school. And the trauma-informed thing, he was getting anxious and then full of anxiety. And I did the breathing technique that I've learned through the trauma informed. We sat down, we was working, I could see he was agitated. I said, sit down, let's do this breathing thing. And we did it. And he calmed right down. He goes, that's weird. He goes, that is super weird. I go, yeah, it works. It's weird, you know, and it's wonderfully weird. And it's always there. It's anytime, anywhere, you know, and he does it now. He does that breathing technique. And you know, it just all those good things like that, those little nuggets of goodness and kindness and beautifulness. You know, I already got my day planned out for tomorrow, and I know that's not gonna go like I planned, but Yeah, we're doing good things, and I'm feeling appreciated, and I'm feeling respected. And I haven't always been a respected person. I was a no good guy, as my dad would say, and didn't care. And I see how that affected my older children, and I'm dealing with it right now and working through it. And I give them time. My oldest two, 27 and 25, I tell them, you know, whenever you're ready to let me have it and to get whatever you have to tell me, you know, I won't cut you off because I'm a big interrupter. I will let you speak what you need to say. And only when I did it, my oldest, my daughter, she really hammered me. She let me have how she felt from like 6 years old. And it hurt my feelings really bad. It made me cry. And I was like, she told me a story where she would leave and they'd come back, and she would tell by how many beers were next to me, empty beer cans were next to me, on how the night was going to go, if me and her mom was going to get into it. And most of the time they'd come in and see a bunch of beer cans and they'd turn around and leave. And so that really, all those little stories that she hit me with. Now my older boys, he's coming around, and it's helping him. And I let him know it's okay. You know, it's okay. I can't tell you sorry enough. The only thing I can do is to stay clean and sober and to work towards a goal and to be in your guys' life, not be that busy. I'm too busy guy, because I used to hate that when somebody go, oh, I'd help you, but man, I'm so busy. We're all busy, you know, we got to make priorities and boundaries and, you know, plan things. And so I'm better at that now. I mean, I got my this next month planned out, and we'll stick to it, you know, because it has to do with money and finances. And so, yeah, that too, having money in my pocket. My oldest boy told me, one of the best things about me being clean and sober is that if he wanted a soda, he could look around the house and find money to go get a soda. He goes, now, but before when I was drinking, he goes, you couldn't find a quarter. The dad was always buying a bottle or something. I was like, wow, I think I'm disrespected on that one.
Thank you, Frank. And I was gonna ask you to share with our
I was like, yeah, all right, now we got change all over the place, you know. That's my I feel pretty good. Thank you,
Frank. Will you go into a little bit about your company and what you do with that for our listeners?
Yeah, it's Building Lives by Building Structure is a nonprofit. We're official 501c3. I have a class that the college lets me teach for free in their classroom. And then we go out on site and operate like Habitat for Humanity. There's a group called Youth Build, and there's a group called Thunder Valley Development Corp. Those are all my templates and guides on how I want to be. We want to do community development and economic development and workforce development. We're just getting going. We received a $10,000 grant, and I'm like super stingy with that. I'm every penny I'm worried about spending. And we're taking off. We're really taking off, and we're going to be building affordable homes, tiny homes on wheels, a small modular home, 24 feet by 30 feet. We're going to have homes on kits that you buy, just the walls are built in the factory, and you have a slab at your place, and the walls are delivered on a truck, and a forklift sets the walls. The Europe tribe built a bunch of houses, and they bought the walls from a company in Oregon, and it's beautiful. We're going to offer those, and a storage container home. A storage container company from Kansas is going to move here. Loves that we have a modular factory on the Hoopa Reservation, and she wants to advocate for women in the trades. And I was like, I'm on board with that totally. And so I'm having fun teaching introduction to carpentry. I want to get into the alternative high school and teach them how to build small things, picnic tables, benches, whatever, get it tools in their hand. And then when they turn 17, they'll be able to take my course. They don't pay nothing to sign up, and I don't get paid to teach the classes. I volunteer my time. And so I just now started getting paid, and I've been doing this for 2 years solid, but 6 years really, donating and volunteering and just keep chipping away at it. And finally, this counselor sees the vision, and that's what I needed. I needed visionaries. I need them to see it, that we can do this together and create training, construction, carpenters, and we can create affordable housing. And we're working with elders and disabled people and veterans and overcrowded situations. And we will be partnering with our housing authority soon. The housing authority has a HIP program, housing improvement program, that is the low income to no income people. And that budget is $75,000. They doubled their budget to $150,000. They don't have the workforce to go and fix your floor or put windows in your house or build a ramp. They don't have the workforce. And so I think they're going to give us a couple of those projects for my students. And I love it. I love it. I've been a carpenter all my life. And I love telling a kid or a student what to do. They say it back to me and they get it done. And it's like, oh, I love it. I love that so much. I'm totally cool with just being a do this and do, and they do it right. And so there's carpenters, or people are screaming for carpenters. Now, skilled labor is huge right now. I myself am a journeyman carpenter, and I can go work on these big, huge projects, but I love doing what I'm doing here on my reservation, creating opportunity. Yep.
That's beautiful, Frank. That's beautiful. I want to be in your community.
Me too.
Yeah, we're good. We're taking off. We're taking off.
Well, it's an honor to have you here with us tonight. And so let's get into it with Kat. So what has been your biggest blessing since being in recovery?
My biggest blessing since being in recovery is that I actually get to live my life now. I actually have a life, because before, all I did was run away. I used because I had trauma that was unresolved. And when those things would come up, I would use. I was always trying to run. And what I wasn't willing to recognize when I was in addiction was that in order to get to the other side of the trauma, I had to face it. And I had to heal it and feel it and work through it. And what I found is that once I did that, what was on the other side is this life now that is my life in recovery. And it's a life where I have community and support, and where I get to support other people too. And by connection, I mean genuine connection. It feels so good to be able to connect with other people on a heart level and to help each other heal. And another huge blessing has been that I did have that Indigenous culture there waiting for me. I mean, as much as when I was a kid and I just wanted to fit in, I mean, it seemed like it would be easier if I was just like everybody else. So I didn't like the things about me that were different. Those things are my strengths now. I'm so grateful that I have that. I mean, it was a huge blessing. And that was another thing too, that I just had to quit running from, like just stop trying to be like everybody else and to accept who I am and to appreciate that and to be grateful for it. And also I just, it's taken until I've been in recovery and learned to, I just had a lot of self-hatred before, like intense self-hatred. And in recovery, I'm learning to love myself. I'm learning to respect myself. I'm learning that I don't have to destroy myself. And I'm learning to love life. I'm learning what it means to live life, because all I knew before was survival and trauma response. And now I get to live, you know. Also, and this would have to be the biggest of all. I have two kids, and just being able to heal and pass that down to them is an incredible blessing and honor. And I mean, I see it in them too. As I heal, I see, as I become more confident, as I learn how to love myself, as I learn how to live, I see it in them too. I see them standing up taller. I see them reaching out and building their own friendships and community and connecting with other people in a real and genuine way. I see them growing and I see them living. And that's just enormously healing. And it's just something that I didn't ever know that I could have. And I didn't know what I was missing because I had never been healthy before. I have always had those wounds and always ran from them and always been afraid to feel or to cry or to be vulnerable. And now I can do all of those things. And I had no idea that this life was waiting for me when I was ready to face my trauma. And it's just a blessing to be alive. I mean, there's so many and they keep coming. And now I really appreciate being alive. Like I mentioned before, I had been suicidal from a young age. Before addiction, I was a cutter. And from the time I was 15, I was a really bad cutter. And that was my first addiction. And even younger than that, I remember being really suicidal. And I didn't know how to live. And not only did I try to run away from my problems, I just tried to run away from life. I was terrified. I was such a scared person. And now I get to live. I mean, just having a life to live and learning what it is to live, to really live, not to just survive, is huge for me. So I'm still early in my recovery, only going on 21 months, but I'm really thankful to be alive now. And that's a big deal for me because I just, like I said before, I used to be really suicidal and I didn't know what I was missing. I didn't know what I didn't know. And I didn't know a lot, and I still don't know a lot, but now I feel actually excited about that. Like, I'm grateful to have realized how little I know because I have that much more to learn, and I'll be working on my recovery for the rest of my life. It's given me purpose. It's given me a passion in life. I love healing, and I didn't even know that. If I hadn't have lived through addiction and all of and the trauma and all of these other things that were my ways of trying to avoid the trauma or to avoid facing my pain. I mean, I'm so grateful that I survived those things so that I could, because they led me to recovery. As dark as they were, they led me to where I am now, and where I am now is a good place. So, yeah.
Thank you, Kat. I'm grateful to have you here and have you in my life as well. I know our listeners, they need to hear about that. Cause I know when I got my kids back, my daughter too was cutting. And so, it's good to hear that, you know, you're working through those traumas and, that we can come out on the other side. And so I'd have to say my biggest blessing in recovery has been just finding myself, and through finding myself, through my traditions, through learning about like what I like, and living it into the purpose I have in life now through my work, and through you know, healing myself and healing my kids. I never knew recovery could be such a beautiful thing. I never knew life could be so beautiful. And to just be grateful for every single little thing in my life. Because all those little, like Frank said, all the little nuggets, you know, those turn into big things, you know. And I'm just very grateful and honored to have you guys on here tonight. For our listeners, I hold a talking circle Saturday night. It's on Facebook. What is it called? The Warrior Down Healing Circle. That's what it's called. And I had put out a little thing saying that I would like to do a recording afterwards. And, you know, Creator puts people in our paths and puts people where they need to be and where He wants us. And so I feel like these individuals definitely needed to be heard. And again, I hope you are hearing something tonight that you can take home with you. And so we'll go into our last question. We've had a wonderful conversation tonight. And so my last question is, if you could ever make a difference within this life, what would that difference be? And what, you know, how would you do that? Jackie, would you like to go next, my friend?
Again, my kids, number one, showing them that life can be good. I do have really good kids. All my kids are really good kids. I was the bad egg. I feel like, I was the bad egg. And maybe being the bad egg that I was, I mean, that showed my kids that they didn't want to enter into that realm of destruction to your life. That would be my number one. And if I could make a difference in showing my kids that being sober is, and they are seeing how happy I am, and they are just so grateful and thankful for that, for my sobriety, and just being able to be there for them. I'd also love to just be a role model for the strong Blackfeet people that we are and are meant to be. Giving back, like how we talked about, we have such a loving and forgiving God. I want to give back that love that He has so many times showed love for me and my children. He's just blessed us. I mean, He's blessing us all the time. We just sometimes don't recognize that. And being sober and having clear eyes rather than living in that cloud, you're able to see the blessings that He gives us. And I want to show my community that being strong and that sobriety is doable. We don't have to stay sick. We can show our kids a better way of life, breaking generational curses. We don't have to live that way and stay in that. It's just our community is so important to me, and I pray for my community that they can see that, because people always talk about, you know, our communities, you know, this way and that way, you know, we need change, but you got to step up. You got to step up and show, if we could all just start doing that, and hopefully we'll just have, you know, followers that are going to fall into that, because it takes a community to raise a child. And I'm not only concerned about my grandkids, I'm concerned about everybody's kids, because I want those children to know that they're loved and be able to live a healthy life. And so that, like I said, be the strong Blackfeet people that are meant to be. We could be a loving and good community rather than down one another and bring each other down when you people see somebody doing good. Like, oh, heck, she was just a, that's all she ever did was shoot up, you know, like, oh, well, I mean, that's my past. And nobody lives in a glass house. So being that role model for my community is so important. And anybody that is wanting to be sober, I'm just so willing to support that and encourage them that life can be so good, you know. And if we could just learn to love one another, not only ourselves, but love one another, spread that love and I'm just lost for words with how much I love my people and want to share the happiness of being sober. It's just so amazing. I mean, God loves us so much. He really, really does. And if that's just making him happy, I mean, helps us shine. It really does. I know there was, when before I got sober, when I went to the place where I detoxed, I only weighed 100 pounds, you know, and so I was like practically skin and bone. And I didn't like looking at myself in the mirror, but being able to gain weight and it just makes a person shine. And I just want to spread that shine and love so much. It's so important to me. It really, really is. I just can't stress it enough how important it is to love one another rather than to bring one another down. And so that is, I guess, the difference that I would love to make. And not only in my community, anybody that wants it, you know, these circles are so resourceful and helpful to a person. It's just amazing what we can see and do once we come out of that cloud and that dark pit that we allow ourselves to live in. And it's just, wow, amazing, lost for words. And that's the difference I think I'd love to make.
Wow, thank you, Jackie. Some powerful words, my friend. And you're already living that out right now, just by you sharing what you're sharing and practicing, you know, recovery and implementing it into your life every day. You're setting a huge example, not only for your peers, your people, but everybody. And so thank you for your words.
Thank you, Leah.
Yep. So Frank, if you could make a difference in this life, what would that be and how would that look like?
I think the first thing I would do is forgive myself for all the stuff that I've been involved with, have done to people, around people, and I'm still working on that. but to make a difference in my community, is I want to be that safe guy. You know, we have 20% population of foster youth in our school district with 6 different schools, and it's a huge number. And I'm always trying to get data or numbers on that, but I'm being told you got to contact the county or we can't give you any information because that's a minor. And I don't need to know who, I just need to know data, stats, so that we can use that data to make a move on something. And so a lot of the foster youth that are being abused, that are being neglected, they're not being followed with their schoolwork, I would like to be that safe guy. And my daughter, she's a social worker too, she just graduated, she's working with the school, and she's identifying a lot of stuff, because when I was going to college, the stuff that I would learn, like psychology, sociology, and I took death and dying, which was an amazing class, but all these mindful classes and the homework, the psychology classes, it was weird. It was like every chapter that was going on in my life right now. And I bring it home and I say, hey kids, check this out. And we talk about it, you know, and that made her change her business major to social work. And she's so amazing. She has such a big heart. She connects with these hard case girls who are a little tough, gangster pack of girls. Right now, there's a large amount of young ladies in our community, and a large amount of them think they're gangsters and want to pick on people. And you know, I feel bad for these young fellas. And so the difference that I would want to make is, and I brought this up when the sex ed classes happened. And now it's a week long thing. And now certain PE classes, you'd learn about it even more. I don't know what else you could learn, but the sex ed classes, you know, it comes in a time of puberty and adolescence. It's a hard time already. And you're going to give them this information, show them this information, show them the parts and how they fit together. But you don't have anything for relationship building. You don't have anything on how to get into a relationship, how to stay in a relationship, and how to get out of a relationship. You don't have none of that training, you know, and everybody thinks that's your parents' responsibility. And you learn by watching your parents' relationship. And so, and that comes down to relationship building and communicating and entering into dialogue. I would like to have a debate team. I had it for my introduction to carpentry class of what was the best way to cook salmon, you know, baked, you know, fried and on a stick next to a pit and why, you know, and they went back and forth on that. And it was pretty good, you know, because the quiet guy, he spoke up and how he cooked his salmon. And so just how are you doing, you know, be able to express that, be able to handle your emotions. Anxiety and frustration. My youngest son, he sixth grade, he shut down. He would put a hood over his head and just put his head on his desk, and the school counselors were all worried about him. It was leaning towards a suicide. He was exhibiting suicide ideology. And so I knew that wasn't the case. He had anxiety. He had a frustration of the noise being too loud, and people weren't sitting in their seats, and they're talking. And when the teacher was talking, and they bumped his chair and they bumped his elbow, and he didn't like that. And that was a trauma informed thing that I noticed, that I realized that I seen that. And so taking all these trauma informed classes and lessons, I can identify some of these young kids that I'm around. If I know who their family is and if they're, you know, heading in a bad way, you can almost guarantee this kid's going to go to the alternative school, do a bunch of packets, graduate, and then hoopo, you get 18 money, and it's like $40,000 that you're just going to hand over to an 18-year-old. And there you go. You know, and the diploma is not worth the paper it's written on, because it's done by a bunch of packets. And so that's where I want to get into the school and show them a trade, show them, put tools in their hand. And so what I would say is to raise the welfare standard we live in, that we don't have to be living from paycheck to paycheck, or what, you know, per cap to per cap, or, you know, we can have goals, we can work things out in a relationship, and not just a guy and a woman, but, you know, how they relate to your teachers, how you relate to your grandparents, your parents, your brothers and sisters, your family. How do you relate, you know, your relationship building. And so that's what I'm trying to advocate for. I advocate for the foster kids, I advocate for trauma-informed, and I advocate for the kids in alternative high school. And so if I can raise their standard or their hopes and dreams, it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you, Frank. And it's true, like They should be teaching trauma informed a lot more within our school districts, within our courts, within our legislature. It's crazy being where I'm at now, and you know how much more we add having education and that life experience, you know. And so I just see us all here creating some amazing work, some amazing programs, and I see things already starting. And so, Kat, what would the question, let me, if you had, if you could make a difference in this life, what would it be and how would that look?
Well, I've got some ideas sort of as I recover, I'm getting in touch with what I really want. I mean, what is in my heart? And I know that it is in my heart that I want to serve not only my own tribal community, but just in general, Native communities. Because I didn't know that I could have a life or find healing or recover from my trauma or recover from addiction. I want other people to know that it's possible. And I'm still figuring out how that's going to work out and what Creator has in store for me in my life. One thing that I really love is journalism and writing. I never finished college, but just as I get healthier and in a place where I'd be more able to do it, I've been very much wanting to go back to college, finish my journalism degree. And you are required to have a minor at the college that I'll be going to here in my community. And I want to make that minor Native studies, Native American studies. I did take some of those classes years ago and they were life-changing. That was way before I found recovery, but I just being able to be in a class and learn about my ancestors, to be learning about them in a way where I got to hear about how strong they were, how intelligent they were, how they did things that were worthwhile and worth learning about, because that was the first time really where I got to take a class where it had to do with me. I mean, it was something that made me feel strong and uplifted. And I don't know how it's going to work out, but right now I've been really grateful to have the opportunity to be there for other people, other Natives that are in recovery, through just being there as a support person. I'm not a certified peer supporter or anything like that, but just through service work, hosting meetings. Sometimes I'll fill in as a host at one that I found earlier in my recovery that really was just a huge support for me and that I found a lot of healing through. So being able to give back in that way kind of is giving me a taste of, it's giving me a chance to sort of try out at some of the possibilities, some of the things that I can do to give back. I just know that I want to give back. I know that I want to do work that helps people to know that they can heal, to know that healing is possible, and just to know that a life is out there, a life that's worth living. So I didn't used to know. I mean, I used to think that life wasn't worth living. I really believed that. And I'm so grateful that I never succeeded when I tried to take my life. I would have missed out on so much and I had no idea. So I know that I want to give back to Indigenous communities. I know that I want to do work that helps people to heal. And as far as journalism, kind of, I just have my whole life, I knew that I wanted to write about something meaningful, something that mattered, and something that would help people to, just the world to heal kind of as a whole. I had no idea what that would look like, but just as through my own struggles and where they've led me. Now, like I said, just through recovery, I found that I have a passion for healing. I always knew since I was a little kid, like I remember being like 6 years old, and I wanted to help the world somehow through writing. I didn't know what that would look like. And I still don't. I'm still figuring it out. But just kind of, I feel like it's sort of coming together. And I'm starting to see that the things that happened in my life happened for a reason. And not only did they lead me to where I am, but they're becoming my strengths. The greatest weaknesses that I had, the challenges that I didn't think I would survive, those things now are becoming my greatest strengths. They're becoming the things that show me my purpose in life and give my life meaning. And it's just a really powerful experience to see things kind of come full circle like that. All the things that used to bring me so much shame. Now, I mean, none of that, I can let that shame go. I can let the shame about making mistakes in my life go when those experiences can help other people, when then they have meaning and then they're worth it. I mean, if it's just, it's such a healing experience for me to be able to be there for other people. And I'm just, like I said, you know, I'm not even 21 months yet. I'm going, working on it on the 25th of this month. Or wait, I am 21 months. I don't always keep track of the date. Okay, well, I'm working on 22 months then. But just, I mean, just that has been really, really awesome. And it brings me a lot of healing. So I just know that I want to use the things that I've been through in a way that is positive and that helps people. And I'm still seeing what that looks like, but I would like to write about issues that affect Native communities in journalism. And I am working on getting the courage to go back to school and kind of explore that more, because I know that I will figure it out and that I just need to take it one step at a time, one day at a time, sometimes one moment at a time.
Thank you, Kat. And 21 months is huge. And I've been able to kind of watch this woman grow, and it's been amazing. And so I guess the question goes to me now. So I got all kinds of ideas, and I already got quite a few projects in the making. It all comes down to funding, right? But within my work with the task force, and me being somebody that's been in the midst of that world, it's crazy because when I got this job with Montana's Peer Network, I was doing the interview process with my boss, and it was like a 3-session interview process. And one of the questions he asked is, what is your vision? Like, what are your visions? What are your goals? And I said, I have a vision of safe houses on all the reservations for the human trafficked. And I see, you know, more certified behavioral health peer support specialists in there that are transferred, you know, traditional knowledge and are able to implement that into their programming and, you know, help our people get economically stable and start healing and going back to where that hurt began. And throughout my work with Montana's Peer Network, I've been one who gets to support the 13 state-funded drop-in centers. And it's funny, Frank, talking about the little houses, that mobile part is huge. I've never heard of that. That's amazing. Well, one of these drop-in centers, they got little houses up here, which is pretty cool. But just spreading, you know, spreading what I'm doing and what I'm envisioning, and then partnering between Montana's Peer Network and the task force and our tribal, you know, traditional ways just implementing, you know, those safe houses into those drop-in centers, you know, because a lot of them have housing. And so I just see so many beautiful things coming out of our people getting in touch with who they are. And like I shared at the group tonight, even those who aren't Indigenous, just getting connected with who you are, you know, because there's cultures within culture, and knowing where you come from is powerful. And again, you know, just living out that statement Billy Mills told me when I was a kid, you know, I'll share that again. He said, you know, our gift is this life. That's the gift from Creator, and what we make of it, what we do each day, is our gift back. And you know, just honoring that and honoring our ancestors through all that we do here on the Red Road. And so we're at the end of our little talking circle here. But I just want to thank each and every one of you for sharing what you have. And, you know, Kat said it perfect, you know, all of those experiences are now our medicine. You know, that's mm-hmm. our medicine mm-hmm. to help heal those around us. And I know for a fact that there's going to be some listeners tonight that are really going to heal. And those of you that are listening, if you're interested in coming onto this platform and being interviewed or sharing your life story, you know, let us know. And and I just can't thank you guys enough for your time and your words and your wisdom. And thank you. Be blessed.